Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, March 28th. I'm Ray Graff. It's spring, a time when a young man's fancy turns to beer. So it's beer and brewing today on the show. We welcome Jeff Wenzel, research and development brewer of Industrial Arts Brewing Company in Beacon, New York. Christian Weber, co-founder and president of Common Roots Brewing in South Glens Falls and Albany. And John Fisher, a retired professor from the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, our personal go-to booze maven on this program. If you have a question, give us a call. It's Beer and Brewing Today, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email us, voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back and start the taps. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's beer and brewing on this edition of Food Friday. We welcome Jeff Wenzel. We'll call him Geo, research and development brewer of Industrial Arts Brewing Company in Beacon, New York. Jeff joined Keegan Ales in Kingston in 2003 while he was a senior in high school. Talk about an overachiever. In 2014, he headed west for a gig at New Belgium Brewing in Colorado. He joined Industrial Arts Brewing Company in 2019. Christian Weber is the co-founder and president of Common Roots Brewing in South Glens Falls and Albany, New York. His craft beer journey began in 2005 as a home brewer in college. Must have been a popular kid, which led to an apprenticeship at a brewery in New Hampshire during grad school. Christian opened Common Roots Brewing Company with his father, Bert, in 2014. John Fisher, a retired professor of hospitality and service management, also joins us. He was at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park for over 100 years. Previously, he was general manager at the Morel Wine Bar and Cafe in New York. If you want to ask a question about beer and brewing today, this would be your chance. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Gentlemen and John, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, you guys are new on this program. Jeff, we'll start with you. Tell us a little bit about Industrial Arts Brewing Company. I hear good things. Not had it.
You haven't had our beer yet?
No.
Oh, today is the first day?
Yeah.
Bad, Ray.
Oh,
man. Bad.
Really?
You're well, bad, not
I
the
don't,
beer.
You know, I really don't drink that much beer anymore. It goes to my waistline, you see.
Well, yeah.
You have to wash your girlish figure.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think our owner says for each beer, he hikes a mile.
Really?
Yeah.
He likes Cyclock then, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So tell me about Industrial Arts Brewing, Jeff.
Industrial Arts started back in 2015 at a Garnerville, New York. Since then, we grew to a new facility in Beacon, right on the Hudson River there. Actually, both facilities are pretty close to the Hudson. We're pretty famous for our hoppy IPAs and clean lagers. And what do you want to know?
Well, what I want to know is you started brewing as a senior in high school.
Oh, well, that's about me.
Okay. You're part of the company.
Okay.
Work with me here now, Gino. Yeah. Work with me a little bit. Yeah. So anyway, what led you to do this so early in life?
You know, as a 17-year-old kid, I had an affinity for drinking beer. Many of us probably did. And
gin and tonic.
You were G&T at 17.
Yeah. Wow. That's a very sophisticated
I'm from Hastings on Hudson. I'm from a hyphenated town.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, downstate. And a friend of mine in high school, his cousin, Tommy Keegan, was opening a brewery in Kingston.
Famous place.
Asked if we wanted to help him clean the place up. It was the old defunct Woodstock Brewing Company. That started in early 90s.
Yeah.
So a bunch of us who we all went to high school together kind of cleaned up the place. And a lot of my friends went off to college and I kind of stuck around home. Because like I said, I was drinking a lot of beer at 17.
Right. Most of the people who are drinking a lot of beer at 17 end up in radio. I'm glad you got a real job.
Good for you. And then one thing led to another and brewing became my passion and just kind of stuck with it.
Well, welcome to the program. Christian Weber, tell me about Common Roots. And you have a similar, you were brewing in college. I mean, that's interesting.
Yeah, so Common Roots, we opened 2014. Like I said, my father and I he was a retired teacher, and I was kind of looking for a business partner and wanted to get into the beer world more professionally. But yeah, kind of similar to Gio here. I took over my uncle's homebrew setup and started realized I could, as a under 21-year-old, could go to a homebrew shop and buy ingredients, but couldn't necessarily buy beer. And I was a popular roommate
in
New Hampshire for quite a bit.
That's a loophole, right?
That is a loophole.
You guys are still pretty young. John Fisher, we'll say hello to you. I mean, everyone knows you who listens to this program. You're on here often. How's retirement working out for you?
Just now starting to relax into it.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it's been weird. You know, I've worked since I was 12 years old with the paper route and 24 years teaching at the culinary. You know, basically I got in my car and it drove itself to the culinary my first morning. But I'm still keeping in touch because we're writing a new wine textbook for the school. My former colleagues and I'm the lead writer, so that's keeping me busy. Because, you know, I have a couple of books under my belt.
I did not know that.
I found this out a couple of weeks ago. How many books now, John?
Two and a half.
So this is the half.
No, this will be one and a half because I'm the lead writer with three colleagues.
Tell me about this book that's coming out.
So we're going to be, I hope it'll turn into a series of books on different beverages and for educational purposes. This is the first one called Elements of Wine. And if it does pan out with a publisher, with Wiley Publishing, it'll be a series that's going to be called The Universal Laws of Beverage.
Oh, I love that.
I love that.
There will be beer section. We're doing wine now, beer, sake, spirits and cocktails, and potentially a beverage management book, because we never found a great beverage management textbook for our beverage management class. So why not write it ourselves?
This will almost be like an encyclopedia.
Yeah, you know, or like the Time Life series, you know, that had different subjects. So Wiley liked the idea of doing the whole series. So we'll see if that pans out. And that'll keep, you know, doing the whole series will keep me busy.
Well, and I hope you get some residuals or whatever they call that when you sell a bunch
royalties.
Of them. Royalties. That's royalties, the thing. Yeah. Number here is 800-348-2551. Brewers are in the house. If you have a question about beer or brewing, feel free. And there's that sound. What are we decanting
5
here?
O'clock.
Well, you can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning.
Ouch.
John, it's 2 o'clock.
Oh, in the morning?
Well, he is retired. Isn't it time for your bingo game?
My wife's waiting for me at the diner right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Early bird.
Early bird special. Well, John Fisher, what are we pouring?
Well, I'm pouring our beefsteak blonde, which is a Kolsch. But as I discussed with the other guys, in order to get through the beers that we have today, because we have 9 beers to taste, we're going to do 3 flights of 3.
Interesting. So, and how did you set this up?
It's called email.
No. I'm a smart guy. All right. No, I mean, how thematically did you put it together?
Light to full.
Okay.
Light to full, and keeping the more bitter ones for the end.
Okay.
So the lightest beers are going to be the first 3. And mine is a Kolsch that's made every year for the beefsteak, which is a huge bacchanal at the culinary every February, where there's just tons of beautiful prime beef steak grilled. And before that, the appetizers are double lamb chops and crab meat salad and stuff. And it fills Farquharson Hall, which is what it looks like, the dining hall at Hogwarts. It was the chapel when the culinary was a seminary. And so it's held in this huge hall that feels like my childhood Catholic church, which is kind of creepy, where I was an altar boy. But there's probably 200, 250 attendees, and there's band, and there's so Hutch brews this beer every year for that that event.
Now, for those who don't know who Hutch is, tell us who that is.
Hutch is our head brewer. He has now taken over the teaching of the class from me, and he is also the president of New York State Brewers Association at this time. Mm. So, well, you know, he brews at a college, so he has a lot of time on his hands.
Ouch.
Actually, he doesn't. But he is a very well-known brewer in the state.
Very well-liked brewer.
Very well-liked, exactly.
Very well-liked.
And well-decorated. A lot of big classic beers have come out of Hutch's brand.
Won 2 medals last weekend, I believe.
Yep, two medals.
Are you
medals.
Guys kissing up? I mean,
no,
you,
we just love
you
Hutch.
Money?
Okay, no, we you just do love Hutch.
Okay, good. All right, let's take a quick break here, then we'll test some beers out, and we'll take your calls. Christian Weber is here from Common Roots Brewing, John Fisher from the CIA, formerly, and Jeff Wenzel, we'll call him Gio, from Industrial Arts Brewing Company in Beacon. We'll be back. Bobby Broom, Wichita lineman on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's beer and brewing on this edition of Food Friday. We have Jeff Wenzel from Industrial Arts Brewing Company, Christian Weber from Common Roots, and John Fisher just hanging around, formerly from the Culinary Institute. Hey, Christian, you know, when I was corresponding with you prior to this booking, maybe, I don't know, a month or two ago, learned a little bit about this devastating fire. Tell me about this at Common Roots.
Well, sure. So in 2019, we had a fire, and it was, you know, sort of a freak accident, and it ended up burning our entire facility down. No one was hurt, and that's kind of all that matters. But it was part of our history now, and, you know, we rebuilt, and we had opened a temporary tap room in the process. But what ended up happening was there was so much just community support and so many breweries and you know, customers and colleagues that just kind of came out to support the company, the staff. It was just a very humbling experience.
Yeah.
And when we did kind of get back on our feet, you know, my father and I decided that we wanted to start a foundation to continue to kind of take that energy and kind of continue to pay it back. And it's one of the beers I actually brought today was our kind of annual foundation beer. It's always something different.
Oh, but very cool. So your dad basically runs the foundation.
Yep.
And is he a beer guy? Does he
love
beer?
He's certainly a beer guy. You know, he had a career for 30-plus years in teaching. He was a vocational, taught horticulture and landscape design at Bosse's. And,
yeah.
You know, his dream wasn't necessarily to go work another 30 years with his son starting a brewery. But, you know, so he's very much involved with the daily business of the kind of brewing and for-profit side. But he has he's the president of the board for our 501c3 foundation.
That is so cool. What have you learned since that first time when you were brewing in college as a home brewer? How have you refined your game?
Oh, my God, it'd be I don't even know where to start there.
It's such a different thing. Home brewing and professional brewing. Like when I first started teaching beer, people said, do you home brew? I said, why would I home brew when we have this beautiful, shiny brewery here in the A?
Oh, God, I tried it in 1985. I tried to home brew. There was a little kit. There was a, I don't remember where I even got it. There was a store, I think, on Wolf Road that had imports, and they had whatever. It was god-awful. It was cidery and just like club cidery sour club soda. It was the worst thing ever, and I never did it again.
I think you didn't sanitize your equipment. I mean, the brewing equipment.
Okay. Thank you for that. Jeff Wenzel.
Thanks for the lesson 20 years later.
Yeah.
30
years
later.
Not very helpful. Yeah, almost 40 years 40 later.
Geez.
Yeah.
Well, Ray, you can get back into it now, you know?
Well, it's great. And we'll try beer in a moment. But, Jeff, tell us a little bit about what you guys are famous for at Industrial Arts Brewing.
We like to make a lot of expressive, fresh, hoppy beers.
Hoppies are still the thing. The IPAs are still the thing?
Yeah. It's kind of part of our roots, most of our brewers' roots. Jeff O'Neill, the owner, created some of the best early hoppy beers in the state.
Yeah.
Flower Power from Ithaca.
Oh, I've had that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of always been his thing. And we've tailored our brew house. We have a 100-hectoliter brew house in Beacon to pretty much make those like fresh, expressive hoppy beers. Giant hop back, so we use a lot of whole cone hops. And
well, I got to say, John Fisher is a very discerning beer person, and he spoke highly of both of you guys. So I think we're probably going to have a good one today. What do we have here?
I am on a fixed income, so
you are.
There are reasons for saying nice things to people.
Do you leave blinker on when you're in the left lane?
No, I just keep turning left.
All right, what do we got here, buddy?
Okay, this is a beefsteak blonde. This is a Kolsch.
Now, what is a Kolsch?
Kolsch is, it's actually technically pronounced Kölsch with the umlaut over the O. And it's from Cologne, Germany. It is an ale, though it's brewed a lot like a lager. So it's almost like a cold ale in a way.
Cold brewed.
Anyway, so.
Technical term.
Yeah.
This is very good.
And this is made every year for the beefsteak.
And this is the Culinary Institute's
Culinary Institute's, yeah, the brewery at the CIA.
So tell me just quickly, and I don't want a dissertation on this, but tell me, did you do a spit take?
Almost.
All right. Listen, you said it's brewed almost like an ale, right? No, it's an ale, but almost brewed like almost like a lager.
At very cold temperatures.
Tell me the difference very quickly.
Most ales are brewed at warmer temperatures, which leads to more estery flavors and more fruity flavors. It's also the older style of beer. And so ale has been around much longer than lager. Lagers originally were probably made in caves, like in Bavaria, where the cold storage in the cave and now cold storage in a tank keeps the beer crisp and clean, just like keeping food in a refrigerator. It keeps it fresh, and you don't get as many complex flavors because it's fermented at lower temperatures.
Oh, very interesting.
And Gio can answer exactly how a Kölsch is, you know, how it's made differently than other ales, other than it, you know, why is it not a lager?
The yeast. The yeast is genetically different. Ale yeast is genetically different from lager yeast.
Interesting. Now, this is a very light alcohol content, right?
Yeah.
It's a very light beer. It's very delicious, very refreshing. You know, I was thinking about the German purity rule of 1516?
The Reinheitsgebot.
Same to you. And then you have German beers, and you guys can answer this because you have so many different flavors and tastes that you make. But if you only have a set number of ingredients, how do you get different characters, and how do you make that beer stand out on its own and be something different?
You know, I would say a lot of it is probably water profile, especially when we're talking about Europe and lagers and whatnot.
But it could apply
regionally,
here
the minerality
too.
And all these different things and pH and things like that were certainly different, and that was distinctively different with yeast profiles when coarse yeast wasn't even discovered until Louis Pasteur looked under a microscope. So that Reinheitsgebot beer law really just talks about hops, water, and grain, not the real crucial ingredient, you know, yeast.
Prior to that in Germany, and maybe John, you know the answer to this, were there many different additives in beers? Or I mean, why
was
this?
I don't think hops were an additive.
Yeah, hops were after Hildegard von Bingen figured out that hops, you know, the one who wrote the Gregorian chants and stuff, she was also a horticulturist.
Right.
And she discovered that hops would preserve beer. And people immediately found out that they could use less grain because the alcohol level could be lower as a preservative because the hops did the work that the alcohol
used. So it was science.
So they saved money
by
using
hops. Very interesting. You know, I also find out, go ahead, Jeff.
Beer predates bread.
Really?
Yeah.
There's thoughts that beer is what started civilization.
Yes, because when you make mash with grain or wheat before you make bread, it's going to naturally ferment like your bread rises.
Right.
So that so if you have this mixed bowl of water and milled grain, and you're like, oh, I'll get back to that, and you put it outside for 2 days, it's going to ferment. And technically, that's beer. So there's a lot of history on this.
Bubbling porridge.
Yeah. Like, I think
that would be a good name for a beer.
It would be a great name for a beer.
The folks who built the pyramids were paid in rations of beer. Because it was more like a, for lack of a better term, mush.
Did they
that had
the
some small amount of alcohol.
Yeah. That term was fine, I think.
Mush?
Yeah, mush is fine.
Temporally, in time, you had this beer purity law in 1516. And it was only a year later Martin Luther banged the grievances on the door. You know, so the beer must have gotten better. Maybe he had one, and he said, you know what? I'm going to do this.
Screw it.
Yeah. So there you go. Number here is 800-348-2551. It's Brewing and Beer Today with John Fisher, Christian Weber, and Jeff Wenzel. And Catherine in Gilboa writes, two questions. What do you do with the spent brewer's grain? Compost, agricultural uses, what do you got?
So we go through quite a bit. We have a 30-barrel brew house, and we brew thick 30, 60, 90-barrel batches. All of ours goes to a dairy farm right up the road where about 10% gets mixed into dairy and most of it actually gets composted.
Ah, okay.
All our spent grain kind of goes to the feed commodity market. We produce quite a bit, so it's kind of difficult for some smaller local farmers to handle the amount of grain we produce. So we have a company that trades it on the market, and they also take our spent hops as well.
Now, when you say spent, you've used it to make the beer.
Spent to us.
But what is it at that point? Once you're done using it, what does it look like? What does it taste?
It just looks like mush.
It's just
mush. You know, it's really it's very high quality grain. It's just we've extracted sugar from it.
But there's no alcohol in there.
No.
So the cows aren't
yet.
Not yet. It might ferment a little bit in the dump truck.
And the second question from Catherine and Gilboa: comparing alcohol content from a historical perspective, how much has the percentage changed over the years, like way back in the Middle Ages? And that's from Catherine in Gilboa.
Well, it depends on who was making the beer where, because if you were a monk before Lent, you made a super high alcohol rich malty beer because they were fasting. And what's the name of the Doppelbock? Aventinus.
No, I love that.
Aventinus is a Doppelbock wheat beer that monks were drinking when they couldn't eat. They had delicious beer instead. But if you were in England or in the colonies and everybody was drinking beer because it was safer than water, there were 1% and 2% beers called small beers.
Yeah.
Because you boil beer when you're making it, so it makes it safe. It's safer than the water.
Well, at the time they didn't know that's why, right?
I probably
they
not.
Just knew that
they
people
knew that
weren't getting sick from beer.
If you drank beer and you got really sick if you drank the water.
The number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. John Fisher, Jeff Wenzel, and Christian Weber are here. And if you have a brewing question or a beer question, feel free. All right, what's the second beer we have here?
That's Jeff.
Oh, this is our Metric Pilsner.
Ah.
Like a nice German-style Pilsner.
Tell me a little bit about
award-winning.
Award-winning. Yeah, I think we won the bronze medal at the World Beer Cup in 2022.
And where was the World Beer Cup held?
In the world, on Earth. wherever they have the Craft Brewers Conference is typically where they host the awards.
So you're not sure.
Every other year.
I forget where it was that year.
All right,
might have been Minnesota.
Okay, so it was in this country. It wasn't Germany or whatever.
Yeah.
Tell me quickly how you would make a Pilsner and how it differs in construction.
From a... like a brew house perspective?
Well, from an IPA or whatever else you're going to do.
Well, the type of hops in a German-style Pilsner are typically from Europe, which we'd call like noble hops, they're known as.
Hallertau.
Hallertau is a growing region. So in this beer specifically, we have some Perla, which is a German hop, some Hallertau Mittelfrüh, which is also a German hop, and then some whole cone Hallertau Mittelfrüh as well.
Mm. Very nice. This is very good indeed.
You.
Yes.
So we use our base malt for everything is a European Pilsner malt. We try to mimic a water profile from the Pilsen region. Make a relatively fermentable wort. And then add our hops throughout our process. We typically add a lot of Mittelfrüh for the aroma addition here, and then also in the hop back, which is like I said, the whole cone. So that'll provide like kind of a more floral, herbal, tea-like aroma, since it's the actual cone of the hop and not a concentrated pellet.
Is the hop shortage over? I'd heard.
Yeah.
That. Yeah.
We're working out of a surplus.
Hops. Yeah.
What happened there? I mean, was that during the pandemic that the hop shortage happened?
That was
I think it was more of just with the boom of craft beer. I think we just, you know, there's a supply and demand. And at one point it was too much supply and then, vice versa, too much demand. And now there's a little too much supply. So
growers planted too many plants and now they're ripping them out. To raise the prices.
Well, also the varietal shift.
Yep.
Is
you mean
the shift in the varieties?
People
planted.
Loving IPA. Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. There's no getting away from the IPA. The IPA is here to stay. And
it depends on which IPA you're talking about. If you're talking about hazy IPAs, New England style IPAs, I mean they are here to stay. But West Coast IPA and English IPA, they never went anywhere. They just got kind of eclipsed by this softer, easier to drink style that people who used to hate IPA and drank it because their friends did, now they have these beers they can drink that aren't bitter, that are softer. And if we get to it, if we taste more beers.
All right, jeepers creepers.
Taste
wow.
One of them.
Talk. This is a talk radio show, I thought.
It is.
It's like doing a show with Dean Martin. All right. Is it all right if we take a call here?
Yeah, sure.
All right, let's do that. 800-348-2551. It's John Fisher and Christian Weber and Jeff Wenzel. We're talking beer and brewing. Avery's in Albany. Avery, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I operate a mushroom farm at Indian Ladder Farms.
Cool.
And so we take Scott's spent grain and grow mushrooms with it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Very cool.
What a great idea.
Give Veltman our best, would you?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I will. But the fermentation process eats up the sugars in the grain, and then mushrooms prefer the cellulose, and that's what's left. So we dry the grain and then feed it to our mushrooms.
You're kind of a big deal in the mushroom game. You've been at this station before, haven't you, Avery?
I sure have. I spoke with David Gustina, and I'm hoping to come on to a Food Friday at some point, Ray.
What kind of mushrooms?
Wow.
Yeah.
What kind of mushrooms, Avery?
Well, we are involved in the advocacy efforts to make a legal pathway for psilocybin-containing mushrooms, but our farm, Collar City Mushrooms, right now grows culinary mushrooms and legally medicinal mushrooms and provides them to restaurants and individuals in the region.
Hey, Avery, if you come on the show, we're not doing a magic mushroom show, okay?
No.
Because, I mean, there are only so many dead bootlegs I can put on. And it'll take hours. Hey, man, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. All right, what do we got here?
That's Christian's.
This is mine. So very similar to Gio's beer, it's a Pilsner. This is more of an Italian Pilsner. It's also one of the beers we do. I was kind of mentioning the foundation before. It's always a different beer we brew, and it's, you know, the proceeds go to the foundation. But our lead brewer, Brent, came up with this. We have a rotating series that always has different lagers and pilsners, and the whole brewery loved it. As much as 40% of our production is a hazy IPA, this we all kind of drink a lot more, maybe lagers internally at the brewery. And so this one has maybe a little bigger hop profile than certainly Gio's does. And that's a little bit more of a backbone for an Italian Pilsner. It has a nice, you know, kind of hop aroma. But again, it's not necessarily by any means like a hop aroma like an IPA would have, but has that kind of more noble.
It's got a little bite. It's got
a little bite. Exactly.
So that is from Common Roots.
Which
what's the name
for
of that?
Food, though. Great for food to have that. That hops bitterness.
It's good with a pizza. It's great with a slice of pie. The number here is 800-348-2551. Christian, what was the name of that particular beer?
It's a series beer. It's called Rising from the Ashes. It's kind of a little on the nose for the, you know, what it's supporting, but it's a different beer every year. But
beautiful.
I love this one.
All right, so you're pouring more things. And just if you're listening at home, these are tiny tastes.
2 ounce pours.
Very much in control. I could fly the space shuttle right now, but I won't do that unless Avery's on the show. Tyler from Troy writes, "This is for all the panelists. Which beer style is everyone's favorite right now?" Go ahead. We'll start with you, Jeff.
Favorite right now today?
Yeah.
I'm drinking this Springbok, honestly.
The beer you're going to taste.
The beer we're going to taste next.
I love Springbok. It's a Maibock, basically, right?
Yeah, more or less.
Oh, God. It's my favorite style. All right. What about you, Fisher? What's your favorite style of beer?
Oh, gosh. The one in my hand.
Oh, really? And that's
No, whatever's in my hand at the time.
I
like so many different styles. There are very few that I don't like. I do rotate. When I buy beers, I try not to drink the same beer twice. I try not to drink the same wine twice. Something I teach my students is don't drink the same thing twice if you're trying to learn about it.
What if you really like it?
Yeah.
Then I don't tell people that I'm having it again.
Okay.
I mean, I like Blanton's a lot, but I learn every time I drink from Blanton's, you know?
Well, I tried some Russell Reserve.
Oh, I love that.
Bourbon, and I like it a lot. So
now we're digressing.
That's because I tried something new.
All right, fine. Well, Christian,
favorite, West Coast IPA, I think, is one of my favorites still.
Thank you for a solid answer. Yeah. Christian, what's your favorite style?
I've been, if I had to have one last beer, I like a nice kind of crisp, a little bit tart farmhouse. But by volume, I've been drinking a lot of lager, pilsner.
Yeah.
That's what most of us drink more of. Most people in the beer world, you know, professionals.
Just because it's light and you won't.
Easy. It doesn't mess up your palate. You know, you can have a beer or three.
You know, it's harder to hide behind. If you're traveling, I go to a new brewery. The first beer I usually have is a lager or a pilsner, because not that I'm ever certainly judging a brewery, but you can see a lot. There's not a lot to hide behind. You can't put hops or fruit or something else.
Yeah.
You kind of see their fermentation profile, and it's a very clean, kind of crisp beer. So
it's like at a new ice cream place, try vanilla first.
Really?
Vanilla is the base for all the other flavors.
Like a pizza place, you get the plain slice first.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is the one I'm to try now? And this is the spring.
This is our Belgian wit.
Oh, this is the Belgian wit.
This is the Belgian wit. This is the mise en place wit, which was our first gold medal award-winning beer. That was the year, actually, we were named Brewery of the Year.
So this would not have, or am I wrong? What's that German purity law?
Reinheitsgebot.
Right. This would not be, this has coriander or something in it?
Coriander and orange peel, because it's not made, first of all, it's not made in Germany.
No,
it's
Park. I'm just saying it has some additions.
And it's not a German style.
Right, it's not a German style.
It's very good. Excellent.
It's a Dutch style.
No.
Belgian style. And this is, I mean, that.
Close, though.
The nose smells a little bit like aspergum, for people who remember aspergum.
I don't remember that.
I'm old.
I don't even know if you can say it on the radio. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. It's brewing today. John Fisher, Christian Weber, Jeff Wenzel, and the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra. Yes, the Count Basie Orchestra. No, it's the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra from about 1944, Opus 1, a classic. 800-348-2551 is the number. Yeah, it's brewing today. John Fisher is here. Christian Weber, Jeff Wenzel. Jeff is from Industrial Arts Brewing in Beacon. Christian from Common Roots Brewing in South Glens Falls and Albany. So the Albany location came later, right?
Albany, yeah. So we just passed our one-year anniversary. We purchased the Albany Pump Station, which was C.H. Evans.
Did you really? I didn't know that.
Yep.
We
still brew a few of their beers as well, but it's now become our Albany outpost.
Oh, fantastic.
And we love being in Albany.
It's beautiful space.
Do they still have all the good food and such?
We brought our menu down there. So, yeah, I would say yes, but I'm a little biased, of course.
All right, fair enough. All right, what's this one?
That's your favorite.
Oh, that's that's Automat.
Springbok?
Yeah, or Springbok. This was a collaboration brew with some friends at Human Robot Brewery in Philadelphia. So they came by to brew a batch with us. We used a malt supplier we've never used before.
A multiplier?
Malt supplier.
Oh, okay.
A multiplier.
This is great beer.
Thank you.
And so how closely do you adhere? I mean, when I think of Springbok, I don't know if it's the same as Maibock technically, but Einbecker is one of my favorite German brands, and that stuff's like velvet. And this is way fresher because it's not coming 3,000 miles away. This is beautiful.
We're only about, I don't know, 60,
almost
70
got,
miles
like,
away.
Bright red cherry notes.
Yeah, I get like a lot of candied orange, honey, super bready notes. It was from a floor malted Czech malt that we ordered in, Raven Malt, which Human Robot uses a lot and really likes. And then we did a decoction, which...
I'm sorry. Say it again.
A decoction. It's a...
I don't know what that is.
It's a traditional...
You will soon.
It's a traditional mash, method of doing a step mash. So how do I do this? So to efficiently convert all your starch from the grain into sugar, there's different ideal temperatures for enzymatic reactions to take place.
Different enzymes are active at different temperatures.
And historically, before temperature-controlled mash kettles, they had to remove a portion boil it, and then add it back.
How long ago are you talking about here?
A couple hundred years.
Really?
Yeah.
Amazing.
And it's seen a bit of a resurgence because there is some flavor implications, obviously. When you cook mash, you're going to impart some Maillard reactions and change the flavor.
All right. I tell you what, let's grab a call or two here, and then we'll try beer three in this second flight. We'll go to Fred in Springfield. Fred, you're on. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, maybe they can answer. What's the difference between a porter and a stout?
Famous question.
None of us want to answer. Why is that? Very little.
Yeah.
Could you say that maybe porters are a little bit drier?
I think porters are, I guess a little less body traditionally and
sometimes a little roastier.
Typically
lower,
a little
maybe
bit lighter, less ABV. I mean, unless you're talking about.
Because the name was Stout Porter. That was the name of a beer, a stout porter, because the porters in London drank this stuff that was called Three Threads.
Right.
That was three different beers pulled off the taps. That was an old beer, a young beer, and then
a medium beer.
I mean,
one, something in the middle.
One person's porter is probably another person's stout.
And so at some point in London, some brewer said, this is ridiculous. The bartender's spending so much time mixing these beers and made one beer called a stout porter.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So they're really, really close. If you read the descriptions in the like the Brewers Association style guide, they sound almost exactly the same.
All right.
I think a beer judge would have the best. That's a great answer, John. But that's
Are you gonna slap John
down? I would agree. I would say that's a great answer.
All right, because that would have been great. Fred, thanks a lot. Do either of you guys do Common Roots or Industrial Arts make a porter or a stout?
Yeah, we do. We do both.
We don't have a stout or a porter in our portfolio year round. We have made stouts, and porters.
I mean, you
before.
Have them at the tap room.
Yeah, right now we actually do have a rye stout. Barrel aged stout that we aged in
delicious.
Some copper C barrels.
I had it last
week. Yeah.
All right. What's this third one here on this flight?
Third one is kind of a special beer. I brought it.
This is from Common Roots.
From Common Roots, yeah. So brought it for Gio here. So
sweet
when
smelling.
It is a wild beer, so this goes through our Cool Ship program, which is a way to kind of spontaneously inoculate wort just using the local microflora in the air.
Yeah.
This is actually our 10th anniversary beer, too. This is a little bit different than our normal rooted beer. Yeah. If you were in Belgium, something that brewers never say, but if you were in Belgium, this style of beer might be called a lambic or a goose.
Okay, that's why I'm smelling sweetness.
Yep, and it certainly has a tart acidicness. This particular batch, because it was our 10th anniversary, has a much higher spelt grain content to it. But it's also kind of special to us, too, because after the fire, our all-wild facility, which is different than where our clean facility of regular beer,
because
which we
beer
would also
make
call
clean beer go wild.
This is the first beer to kind of come out of our new kind of wild facility. Using
this is
our,
delightful. I mean, it's very different, that's for sure.
And just so you know, Cool Ship is basically the same size, shape, and depth as a kiddie pool. And it's a long, low, wide vessel that the hot wort comes out of the kettle and goes into. And by surface area, cools.
Yep. Oh.
Because in modern brewing, you just put the wort through a heat converter, a heat exchanger, and bring it down to fermentation temperature.
Interesting.
In the old days, they didn't have refrigeration, so they would let it cool open, and then the yeast in the room, the ambient yeast, lands on it, and that's where you get flavors like
this. So interesting. So if we wanted to make a framboise, we could do that with this beer?
Well, you could do it with a process, I would say, of it. And
framboise is raspberry, right?
Raspberry, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, but, so framboise is traditionally a sour beer.
But it's a lambic, isn't it?
Not always. Yeah,
sometimes
sour, definitely
it can
sour.
Be.
But a lambic, like, there's a difference between acidifying a beer with sour bacteria and doing spontaneous fermentation. Mm. Spontaneous fermentation is relying wholly on the yeast in the air.
Yep.
But that's a crapshoot, right? You don't know what yeast
is
in the air.
This is very clean.
Unless
you've been
doing it long enough that you know what the population
and it
of
is
your
funny
environment
because,
is.
And sure, we do this sort of seasonally, too. It's usually like a late fall, early spring, when there's enough, the temperature outside is cold enough to actually bring the beer down in time.
Oh,
But then you're also putting it into barrels. You know, we always use usually neutral wine barrels. And a lot of times the environment of that wine barrel can also dictate what ends up happening with the beer. So in a particular Cool Ship season for us, you know, some of these barrels might never see a bottling line. You know, we might end it up. But yeah, this one we really like. We
really good,
it.
Man. Really good.
Thank you.
Christian Weber is here from Common Roots Brewing. Jeff Wenzel from Industrial Arts Brewing Company. And John Fisher, retired from the Culinary Institute. All right, while you guys are pouring this last flight of three, let's grab a couple calls. Matt's in Rosendale. Matt, you're on.
Guys, I have a question, and I don't know if you can answer it for me, but why is every craft brewery that I've ever visited have 8 or 9 beers on tap, and 6 of them are IPAs? It drives me bananas.
Money.
Money. No, that's just what people are drinking.
People are digging it, yeah.
But it really is.
Go for the Pilsner.
It doesn't suit my taste. I can't understand.
I don't blame you. And, you know, IPA pays the bills. It's like vodka in a bar. Especially hazy IPA pays the bills.
Yeah.
And
what kind of beers do you typically drink, Matt?
I like a good, I'll give you an indication. My favorite beer in the world is probably Samuel Smith's Organic Chocolate Stout. Mm.
That's extreme.
But I do like, you know, a good lager. I like wit beers. I like Hefeweizens, which are very similar to wit beers, obviously. A lot of anything except IPAs.
That's so funny. You know, I love a good IPA, but I feel your pain. If you go to the grocery store and you want to buy a 6-pack, there are about 72 different IPA varieties, and if you want a Doppelbock, man, you're out of luck most of the time. Hey, Matt, thanks a lot. Let's go to Michael in Colony. Michael, you're on.
Yes, hi, Mike here. I got a question. I'm a transplant patient and a kidney transplant, and when I left the hospital 3 years ago, they said I really have to stay away from cultures, you know, so like, you know, the original yogurts and things like that. So I gotta always drink pasteurized beers, and I'm not a big beer connoisseur or knowledgeable. Every time my wife and I go to a tavern that makes their own beer stuff, they never have a pasteurized choice. Is it on the scale of cultures? You know, is or active cultures, is IPA like on one end and pasteurized on the other end? Is that how that works?
No,
not really. It's more of the size of the brewery and whether they pasteurize their beers or not.
So the big brewing concerns are going
to
pasteurize.
It's more likely to pasteurize. We don't at the Culinary. I know that they have a pasteurizer at Industrial Arts because of their non-alc line, which is great, by the way. They're called Safety Glasses, and they're delicious. But it depends on the size of the brewery more than anything, I think.
Go ahead, Michael.
When some of these smaller stuff like that are in the urban areas, you know, like maybe Brown's and Troy or something like that, they're probably not want to invest the money in the pasteurization system.
If there's no need for it, why would you put it in?
Yeah, usually more unless you're doing non-alc or something that needs to be shelf stable. Only the bigger breweries are probably going to pasteurize.
Okay. And Michael, if you can't have culture, you've come to the right show. Let me tell you that. Let's go to Sandy in Rotterdam. Sandy, you're on.
Hi. Yes, I had a question.
Okay.
When I was over in the Netherlands, I noticed that when you drink the beer over there, it seems to taste so much better than beer over here. But they had in the market.
That hurts.
Oof.
Ouch. Yes, but it doesn't. It could just be the atmosphere.
Right, you are.
But I noticed they had in the stores. They had Heineken, they had American Heineken, and they had a Dutch Heineken on the shelf. So do they make, when they export their beers from Europe, do they have to do something different to the exported beers to make them comply with the...
All right, Sandy, let's let these guys answer. I know the green bottles don't help, but...
No, clear bottles were worse. But, yeah. Sometimes, if it's called export... And it's a European beer. It's usually higher alcohol as a preservative. But the most important thing is freshness of beer. Mm-hmm. You know, and Sandy, every beer that you had in Europe, I'll guarantee you, is made in the United States now.
Amazing.
And you would probably have it eventually. If you had that style here, it would probably be better because it was fresher.
Agreed. And so the Springbok we had from Industrial Arts was phenomenally fresh. And I'll tell you what, as an aficionado of that style, you got to love it because it's not brand new, but it's good, man. It's
and,
really,
And in the biz, Jeff is the first person I heard say this. He said, "I'm bringing some freshies."
Freshies.
So in the business,
freshies.
I got some freshies.
All right, fellas, we only have about 4 minutes. I have a bunch of emails here, and we have 3 more tastes to go. So let's do a taste.
I'll burn through this one. This is our Cleaver IPA.
This is the Culinary Institute's brewery.
What's the
name of the brewery?
The brewery at the CIA.
Come on, you need a better name than that.
It wasn't me.
How about
I wanted to call it the Kettle.
Oh, I like that.
Because there's a brewer's kettle, man.
Yeah.
Jesus.
How about Fischerhoff or something, you know?
Right, yeah, that's not going to happen.
All right.
But this is our Cleaver IPA. It's a West Coast-style IPA. It is dry-hopped pretty extensively. It won a bronze medal at the New York State Craft Brewers competition just a week ago today.
It's got an interesting aroma. What is that? What else?
Simcoe.
Hops.
Not a Simcoe.
Simcoe.
It's delicious.
3 different hops.
Oh, that's nice, Johnny. That's nice. Very good.
It's like, I wish I had a cheeseburger. Begging for a cheeseburger.
Yeah, well, you know what? We could see if Zach could whip one up. Can you get a cheeseburger for these fellas?
Thanks, Zach. Few...
Make it 2?
All right, I'd make it 2. All right, the second one here, and we only have a few minutes, so what do we got here?
This
is cloudy.
That's Wrench. That's our flagship.
That's a hazy IPA?
Highest produced beer. I think Wrench is probably about 2/3 of our production.
And what's the alcohol content on this?
7.1%.
All right, so this is not for the week. Here we go.
It is not. So there's a hazy IPA, a bunch of wheat notes in that malt bill. And
where do the citrus, the grapefruit
Citra hops.
So interesting.
Citra and Mosaic and a little bit of Cascade Whole Corn.
I mean, you could almost swear there was grapefruit in it.
Always good.
Yeah.
Well, that's American hops. Have the grapefruit and the pine, Cascade especially.
There was one out of Colorado that I loved, Titan IPA. And it had, I think, very pine hops, and it was very delicious.
Well, anything that uses a lot of Cascade is going to have pine and maybe grapefruit, right?
All right, what's this last one? Okay, this is a stout,
This is dessert.
This is dessert, so get a little coffee at the end. So this is this is a double coffee stout called Coffee Cup.
And this is from Common Roots.
This is from Common Roots, and we roast our own coffee. Oh. We have a coffee program, so this has some of our cold brew coffee.
Before we drink, I'm going to need your support here. I'm doing a live Vox Pop Food Friday on Monday. I'm going to learn how to bake galettes in front of a live audience, so I'm going to just...
And I told you, galettes are a piece of cake.
But it's a pie.
No, it's not. It's a flat tart.
Well, anyway, everyone who's coming to see the show, I promise we're not going to be drinking beers, although you can if you want. We'll be at Terrapin Restaurant. It's sold out, so you can't. If you haven't had a chance to get tickets, too late. Christian Weber, how do people find out more about your brewery and maybe stop in?
We'll certainly go to our website, social media, come visit us in Southlands Falls, Albany. And
what's the website?
www.commonrootsbrewing.com.
CommonRootsBrewing.com. Jeff Wenzel, how do people find you?
Same. We're on the World Wide Web.
You're also at his website?
No, we have our own website. And get this, it's industrialartsbrewing.com.
I like it.
And then we also have an Instagram at industrialartsbrewing.
John Fisher, if people want to find out more about the brewery at the CIA.
CIABrewery.com, I think.
Right.
Or they can buy my cheese book if they want to know more about me.
Oh, you got a cheese book?
I wrote a book on cheese.
Yeah.
I'm the cheesiest.
You know, I'm doing a cheese show coming up in several months. I'll consider you now that you have plenty of time.
I'm happy to be considered.
Now, there are a lot of people who wrote in. I'm sorry. Some people want to know how they get my job. Well, let me tell you something. Some days are no walk in the park, but today was great. Thanks again to Christian and Jeff and John for being here. Thank you for listening. Support comes from GNH Lumber at Home at Marvin Windows. Partnering with homeowners and builders on renovations and new home construction, lumber, tools, expertise, GNH Lumber and Home in Greenville, Latham, or Windham. Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasonings, working to spread peace, love, and happiness with handcrafted in small batches, infused sea salts, pepper, and blends, specializing in black garlic, rollingrocksalt.com. And Creative Jam, Lake George, New York, welcoming all types of creatives with space to create, offering classes with watercolor and acrylic painting, yoga, scrapbooking, and more. CreativeJamSpace.com for details. Once again, thanks to Kristen Weber, Jeff Wenzel, and John Fisher for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Barb King screened the calls. Thanks, Barb. I'm Ray Graff. I'll be off on Monday doing the live recording of Baking with Chef Gail Sokol. Wish me luck, people. Sarah LaDuke has the reins for on Monday's Medical Monday. We'll see you on Tuesday.